Mike seconds. Approval of the minutes. Anybody got any questions or comments on the minutes before we have a motion to approve the minutes? Motion to approve the minutes.
I'll make a motion to approve the minutes as stated.
Okay. Declaration, any letters, opinions, guidance, or outside advisory committee presently or in the past? Any Jim?
Well, kind of. This goes back to your DOR question. I've been working with the FAA all summer, trying to get a copy of their flight check for the VOR approach, and they haven't been able to provide it to me, but they did go through their records. There's never been a problem with the VOR flight checks. They've also gone through the monitoring records for the Waterloo VOR in Salisbury, and if I understand it right, it monitors the radial to make sure it's correct, and they haven't had any problems with that this summer. I guess that falls under this category, but no problems with the VOR approach from that end.
How about from this end? I mean, well, you agree with that, Garrett? I mean, doesn't, when you come in on the VOR approach, don't you usually end up far north of the airport?
Well, it's just you get your VOR here, you get your runway here. They're not on a
0-4-5
heading, so.
No,
you're 11 or 12 degrees off, and yeah. If you start at the beginning of the approach and you flew the runway heading, it's going to take you into Georgetown, like you said. But if you fly the course,
it hasn't been any problems with the course. I don't know what you're thinking. Are you going to, instead of being on the 233 radio, be on the 234?
I don't know. I don't know.
If you do that, then you're gonna be off to the south of it. There's no radio that definitely intersects the airport.
I wonder if Kelly.
Give you a picture to look at.
Yeah, I mean, it just seems like on the VOR approach that end up to the north of the airport.
Right.
But
which is, if you flew the runway heading, you would, you know, or, you know, course that corresponded to the runway heading, that would happen. Because you're starting to the left of centerline on the approach.
And they flight check it. Their instruments are probably much more sensitive than ours.
Yeah.
So VOR, Larry.
I mean, there's been no problem with the flight check. There's been no problem with the VOR transmitter, you know, making sure that that's really putting out the right course.
Right. It just seems to be consistent with multiple airplanes that come north of the airfield. Talking about the VOR approach in the 4. And
it doesn't bring you right straight to the airfield.
Right, it brings you to the north of it, and that's what we talked about last meeting, and Jim's comments were that he talked to the FAA and there's been no problems with the VOR. You know, I just don't know if it should be the 232 or the 231 radio or whatever to bring you in closer, but it just seems like you're pretty far off. I know I cheat when I come in. If I'm in the clouds, mm-hmm. You know, I'll cheat a degree or two, just, you know,
I
according
to and use the GPS.
Yes. Right. So.
Well, you are, but approach, but you have to use GPS to get to the airport.
Right.
You fly the GPS on the VOR course, or
I fly
an extended
GPS
center line
on the course, you know, directly to.
Okay. Well, that's a different course. That's a different ground track.
No, I'm not flying the GPS approach. I'm flying the VOR approach, but
right.
Yet when the VOR approach is taking you off the course, then what you have as far as the, on the 496, it takes us right, and the 430 takes you to the, I've got a point out here that I had applied, for the center of the approach end of the runway, and it's a little off.
But if you didn't have your handheld GPS, you would end up to the
430, too.
Okay. Well, not in the.
Well, I got the coordinates and put it into both the units.
Yeah, but in the B-25?
Well, we use the 496 and the B-25 or 430 in command.
Yeah, but if you don't use the 425, you would end up to the north of the airport.
Yeah.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Well, I mean, if you checked it out, you checked it out, and if there's no.
I don't know what else to tell you. I mean, that's.
Just seems like. I'll try to get a landmark when we're right on the course where it brings us out to, but it's.
Mm-hmm.
It's pretty far north. So I don't know. Enough on that subject. Unless somebody else has a comment. Okay, next item, number five, Wings and Wheels update.
Well, that's going to happen. October 5th.
I'll make a note of that.
Yeah. Even without you, Jeff, we're still, the world's still going to turn.
All right, sir.
Now, we got everything covered, hopefully a little bit better organized than it was last year. Everybody's been assigned. Jim, has Chuck even been in touch with you yet for emergency
yes.
procedures?
Yep. Yeah. Yeah, he's gonna stop by when he comes to town.
One thing that he had brought up, because it's something he has to do when he does this at, you know, other places, is, and something we never even really discussed a lot before, was coordinating what happens if there's an incident. Who, what, when, and where. You know, the command structure and what starts to happen. So that's one thing Chuck brought up in our discussion. I said, you need to talk to Jim about that, and then you need to brief. Everybody's working the flight line. Who says what to whom, who does what, who doesn't do anything is the main thing. Okay, who doesn't respond, who does respond, and et cetera, and that's what he's going to talk to Jim about. Dick Cole is coming as our special guest. He's really looking forward to it. He's combining the trip coming out a few days early because he's always wanted to go to Gettysburg. Never been to Gettysburg. So we come out a couple of days early, kind of actually Tuesday, we're going to meet him up at Gettysburg, spend a couple of days up there, and then going up to your old stomping grounds on Friday to the Air Mobility Command Museum.
Make sure he watches the video.
What's that?
So make sure he watches the video there in the theater.
Oh, you're in the video, right? one of the airplanes there, he actually flew. He and Tom Casey, the Dual Rays manager, both flew that airplane. 124 that they have. So it's going to be a very low-key visit, though. You know, Mike wanted to do a press release and all that. I said, no. He just wants to visit, see the airplanes. So if you can get him inside, that would be great. A couple of the airplanes that normally be off limit. Anyway, he'll be down here Thursday afternoon. We got WBOC coming up to do an interview. That's going to be Thursday afternoon, yeah. Then Friday we go up to Dover to the museum, and then Friday afternoon we'll be back down here. There's a little reception for the party at Dan Skip's Hangar. All day Saturday, it's looking like we're going to have, if we have good weather, we will have record attendance, because there's, you know, the word's starting to get out now. It's for the first time we've ever had major corporate sponsorship outside of a local vendor or dealer. We actually have, you know, a major sponsorship with Ford Motor Company and what is it, State Farm?
Allstate.
Oh, Allstate. Okay. So the word's starting to get out. People starting to hear about it. And as far as aircraft, we did a flight over Arlington Cemetery on Monday, and most of those guys are going to come over. Guys, it's going to be in this coming weekend over at Easton doing their chicken drop. Well, those guys are coming. They want to be dual winners.
second leg of the triple crown here, isn't it?
That's right. You got to have some fun in this business, because we've had so much tragedy this year. But everything's turning. It's looking like it's going to be a really great event. The car turnout is probably also going to be a record, because Denny's been having a lot more advanced interest in the car. So our problem is turning into, you know, not how to get cars and airplanes and other vendors here for the event. Now it's turning into the opposite, is how to handle the excess and maybe even start to be selective.
So. And parking.
Parking is always going to be a problem. It's always been a problem. It's going to be a problem. And it's going to be a problem this year. I've been leaving parking up to Jim and the chamber committee to deal with. So I missed the last meeting. What is the final resolution on all the parking stuff?
At the high school and Sterling. Williams Square across the street from it. Buses bringing them here. They seem to think there's enough parking. There's a grass field that wasn't available last year that will be available this year. So that they're not expecting any capacity problems with parking. It's just we've lost some on the airfield. And
some things we didn't think about last year, like porta pots at the parking, because there'd be lines waiting for the buses. So we have two porta pots at each one of the two parking spaces. You know, so we're trying to cover some of the things that we learned from some past mistakes.
Vendors, what about vendors? Any difference in vendors or same vendors, same amount?
You'd have to. Chamber handles all the vendors. And we've been a little bit better organized with it this year as far as, you know, you learn again some of your mistakes about some vendors who will park where they're told to and some who resist that. And what do you do when they do resist that? You know, like the ice cream truck that inconveniently broke down right at the entrance to this building last year, and then right at the end of the event just happened to miraculously start running again.
Tug. Airplane tug.
Well, it will be properly addressed. But the last few years have been somewhat growing on a number of things, and we've resolved some of the pilots were complaining the taxiway was, you know, appeared to be a little narrow, so we moved everything over 10 feet, which took away some of the cars, you know, parking for some of the cars, so we had to find other ways to give the car clubs extra parking. So we think we've got that all figured out where everybody wins, because now also Ford Motor Company wants an area where they can bring their cars, and rightfully so, being a major sponsor, that's one of the things you get for it. The reenactors are bringing even more stuff. So.
How about inbound traffic, air traffic? There's no special procedures for them, right?
Nope. The airport is normal operations. There will be Matt and Chuck both will have handheld radios. They will make requests to pilots to maybe land along. The crossing Bravo taxiway will not have barricades on it. They will be requesting people on radio to land along if necessary for traffic flow along the taxiways. They will have signs and be directing, for parking so that people might come in to question where they'll be parking. They'll all be well controlled. We've already had several meetings on the security, along the flight lines on marshalling of aircraft, who, what, when, and where. Flow of aircraft, flow of cars, flow of everything. So it's going to be a fun day. All now is just got to depend on Jim to give us good weather. You know what, buddy?
See what I can do.
What's that?
I'll see what I can do.
What happens with pilots that are based here and want to fly their aircraft that day? Do they park at the school and get bused in, or do they have the ability to drive straight in? How do you talk about that?
If they're based here, and that means they mean they have a hangar here?
They have an airplane here. I'm not in a hangar or not.
Worst case, say it's not. I mean, if they have a hangar, they probably got a place to hide.
Well, down Rudder Lane, that's not an issue because that's not being affected. The only other place would be the other T hangar or.
Does anybody have an email list of based airplanes?
We have one that includes based airplanes.
Do we have one that's only based airplanes? Because what we're going to do the day before the event is we're going to email a parking pass to get all the volunteers in, the people working in, so they can park down, the far end, so they can get past the security, basically, get past the barricade and actually get onto the airport property. If we had a list of just the airplane's owners could get them one so that they could get in past. Otherwise, they'd have to go to school and come in on the bus. I don't know any other way to accomplish
it. We'll get to that list.
Okay. If you'll give me that, then we'll make sure they have a way of. They may not be able to park where they normally park, but we can get them down where all the construction equipment has been parked, which is where the volunteers will be parked.
Okay.
That's going to be volunteer parking.
Also,
suppose if somebody comes up and says, I have a plane out here, I don't know who's buying access.
The people who are going to be working the gate are all going to be people who are local. So could a kind person get past it? Probably. But also, these are all going to be, it's not going to be a CAP cadet who doesn't know anything other than turn everybody away. It's going to be, you know, somebody from the pilot's group. It's going to be somebody from our group, somebody from the car group, you know, that's local. And they'll be able to make wise decisions on what to do. You know, they're not going to be Gestapos at the gate.
I would think so.
There's always going to be the oddball situations that's going to occur that you will have to deal with. That's why I insisted that we have, you know, someone from the car group be there, someone from the, you know, the airport, somebody from the pilot group. Some of these people are going to be that turned around. The Railroad Avenue is going to take. Plus, the city is going to be controlling the traffic better than we have in the past, I am told. I have been working with the chamber more on that. I'm more involved with what's happening on the inside the fence, where the chamber is controlling what's going on outside the fence, in coordination with Jim.
Have they put out any kind of expected number of people that they're thinking are going to show up?
Bunch.
What's an Alabama bunch?
What'd they say, 10,000? So they thought they had 8 last year, and they think they might have 10 last year.
I think 8 may have been a little high estimate, but, you know, I've never had any training on how to estimate a crowd. But if we get good weather, the event has grown to the point that it's still a free event, you know, we're getting recognition from publicity, the word's getting out, I think it's going to continue to grow. And our issue is going to be how we're going to be able to continue it and still be able to accommodate, you know, the crowds. That's something we need to, you know, meet right afterwards and engage. The event has grown a tremendous amount, and it has the potential to continue to grow. You know, there's talk of even trying to get a waiver and do all that. So we'll see. When I say get a waiver, meaning have, you know, regular air show, but it involves an awful lot. I actually did have a friend who is in the business use all of the standards in the 8900 FAA directory on air shows to actually draw an aerobatic box here based on hatch aircraft, farm, all the other factors they take into account. It can be done. It would not be an impressive aerobatic box, but you could do an aerobatic box and do a regular full-blown show here.
Now, Ocean City, either this year or the last couple of years, has had a TFR.
TFR is a different thing.
Right. But
TFR could be requested, but it's not necessary. I'm talking about a regular waiver.
I understand.
The airspace is closed. Okay.
And that's not, is that something we should look at next year or not next year?
TFR?
I've resisted it when some other people put pretty hard for it. We've had successful events, as long as we have good weather. Without having aerobatic acts and going that route. It's a fall festival. It's not just an air show. It's a fly-in and a fall festival. And I'm almost afraid we start to lose the character of the event if we start trying to turn it into a full-fledged air show and all of the other problems and difficulties that comes with all of that. But I'm only one. Right now, I would be all for just keeping it as a fly-in, trying to keep it fun, trying to keep it free. Trying to keep it going in the flavor that we're doing right now and just keep learning every year and trying to accommodate.
Well, and the big thing to remember is that this is a overall chamber event for, you know, with Larry's group and the car group. You know, they do all the work, and it's really their event. So, you know, if depending on how things go this year, if they decide they want to turn it into an air show, it's kind of their decision, and how they want to run it is up to them and probably not for us to recommend. I mean, yeah, it'd be nice to, you know, if you want to see an air show, say, why don't you guys have an air show? But somebody's got to do the work, and, you know, it's really their event to have and run the way they want to have it. And
it's a whole, you know, I've been to been around it for over 30 years, and it's a big deal to start going to the point, getting a waiver to do aerobatic routines, and everything that goes along with that is, it's a lot of work. And I just wonder if there's any big game plan.
I mean, I personally.
There's been a couple of people within the flying community that have been pushing for that, and it's been a small voice. So.
I mean, I personally agree with you. I just want the rest of the table to understand the differences.
So that's why I've always been so sensitive to people calling it an air show. It's not an air show, it's a flying. It's a huge, huge difference. It's a huge regulatory difference.
Okay. Anybody else got anything on wings and wheels?
Garrett, if you come up with anything else between now and then, you have my number. Just give me a call.
Okay. Okay. Item number 6, wildlife management update.
There's really not a lot going on. We got the problems with the vultures. A lot of that has to do with water and that type of thing, and it's not a good year for water. So,
somebody mentioned to me one time, a couple months ago, we're talking about the problem, and he said that they had a similar problem at his airport, and they brought in kind of the hawks that are trained. I don't know what you call those kind of hawks, but the ones you can train, the ones that sit on your arm.
Yeah.
And they brought them out, and they had these hawks fly. They would send them out to fly around the airport and bring them back in an hour. And that he in his experience, that intimidated the other birds around the area, and they got out of there.
Did they come back after the hawk was gone, or?
That's one of those conversations you have at the counter. He was driving a Lear, and he was talking about our bird problem, and he said, told me what he did at his airport. I presumably it was successful.
Yeah.
Telling me the story, I was assuming.
A lot of our birds are seagulls.
Yeah, you got a big hawk.
They would chase
We certainly have enough retail hawks flying around over here. I don't think yet. I think that would be a waste of time and energy myself. But we've got a lot of retail hawks around that circles around. Maybe not to this specific place.
We see right over the airport.
Yeah. But they wasn't attacking, they were just. They weren't attacking the vultures.
Yeah, I don't know. He didn't
say anything about attacking the vultures.
I didn't think that was really going to be a solution, but it's something he threw out there. I'm just trying to make sure we think all different ideas, but it doesn't seem like something's going to instantaneously get rid of our bird problem.
Wings, wheels, and birds.
Yeah. Well, that's the vulture problem. Geese, really don't see a whole lot of them out there right now. A couple weeks ago, like 3 days in a row, first thing in the morning, you saw them out there all over the runway. They went out and scattered them out, and they were gone for the day. And since those 3 days, I haven't seen them come back. So, or any goose poop on the runways to see that they've been there. So it's
not roosting there, but flying in the morning to draw their wings. Probably it. They don't roost.
Well, the other issue that we've had is the grass out there. With all the rain that we've had, it's been hard to get the mowers out there without getting stuck. So some of the grass cutting kind of went by the wayside for a long time this summer, and they're just about caught up with that. But, the mornings that I was out there, the geese would be standing on the runway, and I go out and chase them. They just run into the grass, and I see these little heads sticking up. Because they got a place to hide. Now that their place to hide is gone, and I don't know if that's why they haven't been around lately, but right now I don't see a big goose problem. The deer, really haven't seen a whole lot of deer. I've seen two or three. I was talking to one of the state troopers today. They've seen maybe two or three themselves down there. They just don't see it like they used to. So
used to.
I don't know if anybody else has any different experience with them lately. But.
I don't see them like he used to.
The same thing that happened to me when I landed at the Lost Nation Airport in Cleveland recently. coyote or a wolf, one or the other. I guess they're coyotes that come across right in front of me with a rabbit or something. Hmm. Well, at least we don't have coyotes down here running across the road.
Well, we do have coyotes now. Yeah, there's one seen right in Georgetown within the last week. Now it wasn't
was,
wrong.
This was
side.
Close
so,
enough. We
so had there, the there is coyotes down here now. Sad to say.
Mm-hmm. That's all I have on wildlife, unless anybody has any questions or comments.
Airport update, item number 7.
All right, take a deep breath here. Here we go. The concrete ramp between Sussex Arrow and the T hangars was completed. That was done on schedule and below budget, so we're happy with the results there. They actually had a little money left over. They did a little extra work that we hadn't planned on in the beginning. So, I think it came out pretty well. And we're planning the same thing for the other side next spring, sometime. The dates to be announced, but that side is going to be a little bit different because we have problems with access on that side. You know, making sure you can get through there with your B-25 somehow.
I can always tow out and lock construction.
Well, what we did with this one was that whole thing was closed, so mm-hmm. Barricaded off. So, we're going to have to look at access, and we may need to
probably do it in halves.
Even if you mark off the whole thing, I just took it out by Sussex Arrow.
Okay.
That's where we go out most of the time now anyway.
Okay.
And if it's really tight, we could tug and tow it out of the taxiway to start up. I mean, we could, like right now, I'm in Salisbury because we had the Arlington Cemetery flight on Monday. I wasn't going to be able to get, we would leave at 7, but I wasn't going to be able to land back here on Monday. So when we came back Sunday night from North Carolina, we just went into Salisbury, left the airplane there. I told Jim earlier that when we knew this was going to happen, we accommodate. The work needs to get done. We'll find a way to keep it operating.
I was saying, there's more to think about with this one than there was last time, and we'll be talking to you and Skip and Sean and everybody that's back there to make sure that everybody's going to be able to get out. So, like Mike said, we may do it in halves.
That back row can get out between the wooden T-hanger row and that first row of airplanes. If I can get out through there, if I got an 80-foot wingspan, anything Skip's got can get out there.
Well, I was just sitting there thinking whether Skip's,
what?
Skip Jones.
You can get out through this wingspan's not that high.
Yeah, but yours is high. You go over some of the.
We'll talk about it. I mean, that's.
Yeah. Even if we had to move that one row of airplanes right there just for the and put them out here on the new pad for the while you're doing the concrete work, you're certainly going to get probably a better job, a better price from the contractor if you can do it all one time.
Well, and not that, but I don't know what you got right in front of John Riker's hangar. You did that one patch right there.
Yeah.
If that's going to be able to push you far enough away from it, no?
No.
Okay.
But point well taken.
There's only three or four airplanes based there between the wooden hangar and Sussex Arrow. Move them out to the big pad, let that be the access, block off the whole thing, do it all in one job.
Yeah. Yeah, it'll be easy. We just need to talk to each other.
We'll get it done. Memorial Day weekend, probably.
4th of July, Memorial Day, whatever it takes. Okay, the runway extension project, the project that we're in the middle of right now, which is what we call package one, this is the project that added 500 feet to the end of the runway. Monday night we opened the 500 foot extension, restriped everything, converted over or switched over the runway lights. They're all LED lights now except for the outboard threshold lights, which are still the old quartz lights, but they're temporary. So if those look a little different, that's why. So officially, we have a 5,500 foot runway. Runway four has a 500 foot displaced threshold, which means you have a landing distance available on runway four of 5,000 feet, just like you did before. Every other distance, takeoff run available, accelerate stop distance, the other one I'm missing. All the other declared distances are 5,500 feet in both directions. So.
Is this place threshold because of the road?
Yes. Well, not exactly. Where it is now is because of the instrument approaches. We put the threshold back where it was, so now the instrument approaches are still good. But I'll get to that in a second. But the pappies on both ends are the original pappies, the ones that were there 6 months, a year ago. Those have been turned back on. You'll notice on the runway 4 end, there is a new set of pappies, you know, towards the terminal from the old set. That's the new set. Those will get turned on next year with package 2. Let's see. Right now, the runway end identifier lights are not wired for runway 4. Those will be done by the end of the week, and those will come on by the end of the week. The instrument approaches that have been in effect for the last couple of years are fully operational. The NOTAM that was out, that no LPV or LNAV, VNAV minimums, that's gone away because we put the threshold back to where it was. The instrument approaches are based on the actual threshold position. So that's, you know, we're back to the original thresholds again for landing. The instrument approaches are still the same. There's no changes with that. There's still...
Don't come after me when you see me touch down a little short.
That's your choice.
I do remind everybody that it is being recorded.
Just to help you out, the concrete strip that goes across, that's going to be the new threshold that's based on obstacle clearance over the road and everything like that. So you've got 130 feet that's protected.
My approach angle is 5 degrees, not a standard 3 degrees.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's your choice. There's still some work left to be done. They'll be out there in the next couple weeks. You'll see some construction equipment. The old runway lighting is being demolished, taken up. You'll see them out there with the trenchers and, you know, taking the old lights out around the runway. There's a lot of seating and mulching to be done, some punch list items, cleaning up at the end of the project. So, we're coming to the end. We did open the runway Monday night, and it's been getting used. Really no way to restripe it and then not be able to use it. So, kind of immediately opened and so on. Any questions on the current project?
The reels, at night, on a dark night especially, they're pretty blind.
Mm-hmm.
Like Wingsburg, I know, has where you click them and come on, and then you can click 3 more times and it turns those, just the reels, off.
The reels are going to be connected to the runway lights.
Yeah. But I thought that was a good idea because they are, those new LED reels, you can see them way out. I mean, there's no problem finding that runway. But when you're coming in just towards that flare, they're pretty blinding.
Yeah. Well, the new reels are at the beginning of the pavement. So you've got 500 feet between the reels and your landing threshold for now. So you're going to be past the reels. Hopefully you'll get your night vision back in time to flare and touchdown.
Is their brightness connected to the same intensity level as the runway lights? So you can turn them down to a...
Right.
You can't turn them off.
Right. You have to turn them down with the runway lights.
You can at least turn them down, I guess.
But if that becomes an issue, we'll take a look at it and see what we can do.
If you come in one night and it's 200 and a half, you'll be wanting as bright as you can get.
Oh, I know. But I'm just saying that I found that pretty interesting. That's the only place I've seen it.
Up your night vision,
you get 3 clicks and just those go off and runway lights stay.
It's on a different circuit then.
I don't know. So.
Okay. So that's what we've been calling package 1. Package 2 is the continuation of all this. We just received a $4.3 million grant from the FAA for this package 2 work. For the FAA, the money is for two projects. One is called Rehabilitate Runway 422, and the other one is Extend Runway 422 Phase 4, which is the final phase of the runway extension, or you know what we've done with Package 1. The Rehabilitate part, that's we're going to mill and pave the 5,000 feet of the original runway, and then come back and groove all 5,500 feet of the runway. So there's kind of some overlap between what's considered extending the runway and rehabilitating the runway. And it's very confusing. It's just kind of the continuation of making the runway a better runway. The other work that gets done is we complete the approach lighting system. Under Package 1, we put in some things that made sense to put them in while we had the ground opened up. Things like the threshold bar, the concrete pad that you see going across, that's the threshold lighting for the MAL system. And then there's also the first set of approach lights in the pavement. So we've done some of the MAL's work already. Package 2 completes that, puts the towers up, puts the control, all the controls in the, you know, a special vault, which will go across Park Avenue, and you know completes that system. The other part of that is the runway gets restriped to meet FAA standards. Right now the runway doesn't meet standards for threshold sighting. So if you're confused about the 500 foot threshold, hang on, because it's going to get more confusing. Both ends of the runway are going to have a displaced threshold. The runway 22 end is going to be displaced 170 feet, and the runway 4 end is going to be displaced 370. So actually gain 130 feet on runway 4 when we do that. But both ends will have the arrows and the bars and displaced thresholds. And like I said, that's to meet FAA standards for obstruction clearance, and that's part of the project.
The obstruction on 22, is that due to the ball fields or is that due to the trees?
It's due to the railroad tracks. Railroad tracks on 22 and the road on 4. Okay. As far as the schedule, I don't know if you want to take this part, but...
Okay. Our schedule, because of the delay in receiving our FAA grant, we're not going to be able to initiate construction this fall. We're now aiming for a spring construction period. And if it goes according to plan, we would be following the same 3-week mill and pave, 1 week open, 3-week mill and pave that we had proposed for the fall period. I would expect that period would start April 1st, first 3 weeks of April. Easter falls in there. I don't know if that's a critical time for you, Garrett, so we want to talk to you a little bit about that, whether that's a week that you need to be open. We can work around that. And then following that period, sometime 3 weeks in May, we would be closed again for milling and paving.
3 weeks.
Mm-hmm. 3 weeks, mill and pave, open up for a week, 10 days. Close again for 3 weeks, finish milling. Well, it wouldn't be milling anymore, it would be paving that second 3 weeks. The milling is all in the beginning of the project. We then have a period of about 30 days minimum that we have to wait for the asphalt to cure before we can come back and do the grooving process. And then we'll have another 4 or 5 days for the groove.
And striping.
Striping as well.
So you put temporary striping down during the first 3 week stub, and you temporary stripe that, I guess.
Yeah.
Yeah.
There's a lot of work to be done over the winter. You know, obviously talking to the right people about schedule, and you know, there's some long lead time items such as the MAL shelter with all the equipment in it, and you know, shop drawings and all the normal construction things. So, you know, we're not going to be sitting around waiting for the spring. So there'll be a lot of things happening. Any questions on that. And, you know, just like we tried to do with the fall schedule, we'll have some sort of a public meeting in the spring to explain this to everybody and get everybody's concerns. And so more to follow on that.
I had a meeting with the contractor today. What we're going to do is we're going to have a fall pre-construction meeting just to talk about the submittal process, and then come back and have a second pre-construction meeting before actually mobilizing on site. So I'll know more information after the first of the year about particular schedule and what's being done.
Same contractor, or was this a different contractor?
No, we have a George and Lynch this time, which frankly I have a better relationship with. So.
During that whole...
The only thing I ask is to stay, keep me posted, please, on, you know, when you at least talk to us about when you can be down for 3 weeks.
Oh, yeah.
So that shuts me down. I can get out the short runway. I can't get back in. Short runway. In a combat zone, yeah, I can get back in. But, you know, normally, we have just elected...
Can we shoot at you or something? Or does that help?
You know what it's like, Jim. That sometimes you just sit down and you're... Even though it's within the airplane's performance characteristics, it's not smart.
I'm surprised you can take off.
So we can get out, but you know, we need more to get down.
Now we'll definitely, again, that's why we want to have the public meeting. And,
the springtime, we're normally gone for several weeks anyway. Because everything starts in the spring down south. So March and April, if that's when you're talking about doing the construction, or are you talking about April and May?
April, because I have to have periods that are suitable to meet FAA allowable paving conditions. I feel very comfortable after April 1st, we will be able to do that. Now, the good thing about this package, we're not moving any dirt, so we're not as susceptible to the rain. Obviously, on a rainy day, we can't be working, but when the rain stops, we basically can go right back to work. The disadvantage that we had in this past spring and summer is we had, you know, the earth opened up and it collected
and the
water
and season on roughly.
Yeah, timing was bad to say the least.
I just ask, please.
We will keep you informed.
They will keep me posted so that I can plan. Because that also, you know, sometimes winds up being part of the maintenance season. So we got to be here to do maintenance. During that period, I may have to schedule that somewhere else.
When will your schedule start to come together that you can?
After the ICAST convention, first week of December. But you know, right now I've already had several bookings in April. It's all down south. You know, so we'll leave probably, and we may leave as early as February, but we may be doing flywork at Daytona. That's early. And if we go down to Daytona, I'm not coming back until maybe early May. So it may not even be an issue for me if we wind up doing the Daytona thing with Gary Smith. But still, as soon as you know dates that you're planning on, I just love to know through an email or something, just like you're planning on it. Not a problem.
And this doesn't really affect you, but well, it does with your other airplanes, but 1028 will be open the whole time, except for one day where they're working in the approach end of 10. So, you know, we've planned access to the other runway to make sure we've got at least one runway open. But more to follow on that. Okay, getting back to instrument approaches. I've been working with the FAA all summer on our new approaches for both ends of the runway. These approaches are based on the eventual displaced thresholds. You know, we've been going through all the obstruction analysis and making sure that the obstructions that they think are there really are, and you know, the ones that aren't there, you know, showing them that they're not there. You know, for instance, they had a 200-foot tower across from Del Dot, across 113, that big field. There's no 200-foot tower there. You know, some of the trees we cut down 10, 20 years ago in the industrial park, they're still showing. You know, and we show them, you know, a Google Earth picture. There's trees there, but they're the low-growing trees. They're not the ones we removed, but they think there's a 100-foot tree. So we've been working with them all summer to clear all that up. And they've developed new approaches, new VOR approaches, and new GPS approaches to both runways. Right now, they're planning a May 29th publication date, which hopefully is going to coincide with the end of our, when we get that construction done, and that should work out nicely if everything comes together. One of the problems that we have is the instrument approaches need to be flight checked 2 months prior to publication. And to do that, the threshold bar and the runway number has to be in its final location. So we're going to have to do some work around coming up with some temporary markings so they can come in, flight check it, we'll tear it all up and put it back down later. But right now they're shooting for the May 29th publication date. And it's every 56 days, so we're hoping for May 29th and everything comes together. I was hoping to have a draft copy of the approaches to show you tonight, but they're not ready yet. What I'm told, and this is the guy out in Oklahoma City that's developing the approaches, is runway 22 minimums will be 3/4 mile, and I'm expecting runway 4 will be 1 mile, possibly 3/4 mile. So, with the height above touchdowns that go with that. So it's a significant improvement, and I think everybody's going to like it. Well, I guess it's not definite until it's published. So, I'll have to wait and see how it comes out. But, we've done some significant obstruction removal with this project. We cut down 38 acres of trees, and that's made a big difference. Like I said, we've cleaned out their obstruction list, and we're expecting some good things out of it. When the MALS comes up, we'll be eligible for another 1/4 mile credit on runway 4, and that may make things even better. So, it's going to be a significant improvement on that. And between now and then, you got the same old approaches, the same minimums. Any questions on instrument approaches?
There's a group of trees that's lined right up with the center on the end of 22. And you guys did a great job on both sides, but there's that one little patch.
Yep, saw them today.
And didn't know if, were we going to go after those, or are they off the property, or what's...
Are they on King Farm?
No, they're sports at the beach.
But it's just about the center of the runway.
Yeah, I see right there. When we did our survey and laid out the plans and everything, they didn't meet the criteria for being removed. Obviously,
standing alone, they
look
bigger.
A lot worse than what they did on paper. So we're going to look at that.
It's just at night. Daytime's not a problem, but at night, you're following that pappy in, and you're just wondering.
Yeah.
You know those trees are there. You're like,
and it's on.
Might be in the railroad right away too.
Yeah. But I just saw that today, and I haven't had a chance to talk to Mike about it.
Now, is the railroad there owned on the county property, or is that?
No, it's its own right away.
Okay, because that railroad's owned by Delnot. Lease the coastline railroad to maintain and operate.
But we have to deal with
Perrine. Mike Perrine, or
we have dealt with a variety of people through the years as this thing has flipped and flopped.
Mike Herholt.
Yeah.
Okay.
Right.
Yeah.
That's Delaware Coastline Railroad.
Yeah.
That's not the state, but
right.
But,
okay.
If it's on the right of way, that's a lot easier than being on sports at the beach. But the trees that were on the plans to be removed got removed. And the ones that were left were the ones that, according to the survey, needed to be left. So, I agree with you. I was out there today, and I mean, I know what you're talking about. So we'll take a look at that. Any other questions on instrument approaches?
Yeah.
The only other thing to announce is we've selected a new airport consultant. Our agreement with Urban Engineers expired. We went through the consultant selection process and have selected Delta Airport Consultants, which I'm sure you're all familiar with. They were the guys before Urban, and you know, they'll come on board with the, you know, as soon as we have a project for them to do. So right.
They're fairly large out there.
No, not actually. We were actually a smaller firm. Delta is.
Delta's a lot. We hired when we did the study for building airport in California, so we worked with.
Yeah,
I enjoyed working with them.
They're a good firm. They're a good firm.
Probably the next project under our grant program is some expansion of the ramp out there. That'd be the first thing that they come on board to do. We also have some other work that we may give them in the meantime that I haven't talked to Mike about yet. So that's all I'll say about that. Any questions on the airport stuff? That's all I got. Is item 10.
It's lower, but is it, my report, I need to know if we are getting a business plan.
Yes.
You want to skip
it? You're going to take my whole report.
Well, you want to
skip it? Which is that the business plan, we'll have a draft this week.
Wow.
That's my report.
Since we're up to item 8 now, apparently, one thing that it does is wonder, how can we get some kind of an assistance to get a headcount for Wings and Wheels that we can use and rely upon for seeking sponsorship money and trying to expand our reach for promoting the event, publicizing the event, getting sponsorships, et cetera, and or through the Economic Development Office or Southern Delaware Tourism, one or the other, ways to estimate the economic impact of the event on Southern Delaware. Both of which, you know, would be things that could help benefit, you know, the event. But, you know, we count every penny, pinch every dime, and bend every nickel, you know, every year. I would be hoping that, this has become a large enough event and important enough event for Southern Delaware or for Sussex County that we could get some assistance maybe in trying to measure some of these metrics and establish some numbers that would be helpful not only for the county, for the tourism director, for economic development. How do we do that? I don't know how to do it. But
I ran security for 19 and a half years for Dover. And I had one man go to all parking lots where they allowed parking, and they were busting people in for the razors and stuff. And he counted cars, and they put four people to a car. And that's how they estimated the crowds.
Is that what helped Dover?
Yeah.
The problem that I foresee with that is the race is a confined time where we're pretty much, I think our window of people coming in and going out, you know. That's a good suggestion to start with, for sure.
Are they busing? I mean, are we still doing the little busing thing?
Yeah,
like
people
nobody
come and
walking.
Go all day. Yeah, it's just
yeah, but you count
plus
how many people are on the bus, unless they're driving in themselves. You know, not come and go, just how many people come in.
You'd be surprised the number of people at the race that don't stay. They go and buy a T-shirt at the midway and leave.
Mm-hmm.
So, I mean, it's going to be a guesstimation no matter how you do it.
Certainly isn't an easy task coming from all directions.
Mm-hmm. And this is a chamber function, Georgetown mm-hmm. chamber function. The Georgetown Chamber is funded from Southern Delaware Tourism, which is the agency that gets the state money that
Delaware
is allocated
tourism
from
doesn't
heads
fund
and
anything other than helping market stuff. We don't get any money from Southern Delaware Tourism.
Georgetown Chamber does. I don't know if Wings and Wheels does.
The chamber
does.
The event does.
Right. So it would be more of a chamber to Southern Delaware Tourism for trying to get like an allocation. I know there would be partnerships and that sort of thing.
headcount, I would think that the driver, this is a clicker, you know, count how many people are coming on, whether you have somebody ride the bus or if you just have the driver clicking. Because you're not charging the park and you're not charging to
not
ride,
charging
right?
admission, so there's no ticket
right.
sales to gauge by. That's
right.
the difficult thing.
Right.
Well, there's only a couple ways into the parking lot, too. And it may take, you know, just somebody standing there counting cars that come in.
Some people walk, too. From the parking lot.
That's not that critical.
Well, everything is going to be an estimate. But
yeah.
You know, just right now, we talk about, I hear all different kind of numbers bounced around. You know, as far as what kind of attendance we had last year. In the middle of the day, the place is packed. But how many people was there? Because you know, it was fairly spread out. Right?
And how many people, everybody that has a car in the show?
Well,
there's
that's
one person in every car, and so there's an
that's
attendee.
That's probably 600 people right there. Because there's at least two to a car.
Right.
Very few people bring their car if you don't have somebody with them for the car show.
And then you have the vendors that set up early. And
well, all that can be, we can pretty much quantify
things.
People in the cars, the people in the airplane, the people with the vendors, and that kind of stuff. What we cannot get an estimate on is, unless we point somebody to do that. But I was just wondering, is there any way, of, since we got a whole panel up here of county people sitting here, any way, is there any resource within the county to give us any kind of assistance with gauging attendance and economic impact?
All you think of is like security.
Well, I know like in the Washington, D.C., when they have events around the Washington Monument, they use aerial photographs to determine. So I don't know if you have anybody that could take a photograph a couple times a day during the event.
Actually could, yeah. It's in one of my little Ronca.
And
we
the
don't keep here, we keep it over at Herlock, but I could have Steve go up every hour or so
and
take a picture. That's probably a pretty good idea.
And good for marketing. The numbers that we get on economic impact, say for Swim Sports at the Beach, got the World Series numbers, that came from the state. So state tourism has the capability of, it's through the Delaware Economic Development Office, state tourism, that they come up with. That's where the count was, $2.5 million for World Series or something. It was reported
to
the
news.
So
I need to go to
Mr.
Thomas then with Southern Delaware Tourism and ask him if he has any way of assisting us with this.
I would through the chamber. I do know that they do marketing and partnerships and all that too, so there may be an avenue that way too.
I'm a little here. I'm kind of off. I'll tell you where I'm coming from. We have our church services for years. We count these people that come in. And I asked myself, now why are we counting? Why is it so important to count these people? The numbers, 99% don't mean nothing. Now, does it make any difference if we have 7,000 or estimated 8,000? What are we going to do?
It makes a huge difference when you go talking to the sponsors. That's the first question they ask.
Well, you know,
we
say so we have about 8,000 there.
And that whole, you know how much water that holds?
Well, then you got to have some, you got to,
piece of cloth.
You got to have some credibility.
The next thing you say is how you measure it. You got to have the credibility to stand by it. There's a lot of air shows that wound up actually collapsing because they were caught with exaggerating the figures. And we're not even going to be, we're not even going to start by going there. You know, we're going to have metrics that we can gauge by photographs or someone counting, or we have some way to do it. I don't want to be caught, you know, the fudging numbers, because that destroys your credibility forever.
And they're going to ask, well, who counted the numbers?
And how?
If you have a PR consultant do it, there's a lot more credibility there than somebody that just decided it looks like 7,000 people.
If we go to Ford Motor Company, for instance, looking for sponsorship, and they ask, they must have had somebody out here that solved this, and they must have had direct input from the local dealers to be able to get that sponsorship right now. But if you have, you know, my experience has been working with, you know, the larger corporations, larger businesses, their people that's involved in their departments deciding where their dollars are going to go are very, very good at gauging whether or not what you're feeding them is fact or fiction.
Well, the numbers that we have that say how many visitors we have during the summer are taken from a formula along with Del Dot's count of people crossing the bridges.
Mm-hmm.
problem, we can always stick a hose out here across the road.
Hey. Yeah, but you're not going to get the people that are busting.
If the hose across the road was far enough up, you certainly could.
Figure out time to go across, figure 20 people, what are that bus holding?
There's only parking in two places out there. Two counters, and then you have the car people and the vendors.
Yeah, but I don't know that you'd get permission to get them in a short period of time.
We'd like to know how much traffic's on this road.
I understand that. I think for the short term, you know, with a week away, that we're probably the best answer is going to be to get some aerial photograph.
Well, they can use that too.
And the aerial photograph is easy to attach to any kind of justification that Ford Motor Company or whoever asks.
However,
the process to get to use one of those.
Yeah, however, we have a different situation. Like when they have over the Washington Monument, we have people there that's going to be staying there. These people are coming and going. Some stays 15 minutes, some stays hours. So some is going to be counted several times if you take it every hour. I mean, let's be realistic about it. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's not an accurate count. It's still an estimate. It's one tool. Yeah.
But if we could back that up with a traffic counting machine, count how many cars passed over coming in Railroad Avenue and coming in, you know, there's only two ways in and out.
Right. And
are any of those kind of things available for rent anymore?
I don't know. That I don't know. I can tell you DelDOT doesn't rent them. And with all the roads they've got to count, they've got schedules of counting roads probably for a year. And they have to do a certain frequency of road count, and that affects the paving and everything else that goes on. So,
and
one road's not a state route, so to get permission to use it on a non-state route, probably would.
Since you ask a favor there, since you know who manufactures, rents, leases, whatever those kind of devices, certainly the state probably leases a lot of those too, so own. Could you give me see if you can find that information somewhere where I could lease one for a weekend or two for the weekend?
Yeah, I mean, it's, I think we own all ours because they're used just about every day.
Surely somebody has something to lease for rent, short term rent.
We could probably have to make a Tucker Road, they're not using it now.
Does county roads have any?
Yeah. No such thing.
There are no county road maintenance, it's all state.
No, how many buses are there? Does anybody know how many buses there are that are going to be running from the school to the event? Is it just two or three buses?
This is really not for this committee to discuss. You know, I just to come up with solutions. I was just asking a question since I got a whole panel here from county.
Well, Julie,
any kind of county resources?
Idea.
It doesn't seem to be.
If each bus driver equipped a camera, you're getting for getting down the dollars for it for nothing. If each bus driver click over, there's only three or four, we're only talking about a couple of buses, I assume. And you can
click them.
You'd be better off to have a volunteer stand at the entranceway to your parking places and count the cars.
You might, but they turn over. There's volunteers, you know, they change. I mean, it might be a volunteer job, or it could just be the bus driver.
Yeah, that's why I asked about ROTC. I think they're fairly responsible and would station somebody there and pass it on to the next person. They would just leave it sitting. But I don't know if you're using them this year.
We are. Yeah. And I'll talk it over with them. So we'll see if we can find somebody to do actually that. Maybe somebody stationed at each one of the places just to simply count heads getting on the buses. You need to count getting off. All you need to do is count getting on.
Well,
there's
only two primary places to walk on, both roads. Rest of it's pretty much ditched. So people are going to walk on and off the campus here by those two access roads, unless I'm seeing something different. So, I mean, it would take two counters counting people just inbound.
We'll work out something. I've taken way too much time for that.
Okay.
I appreciate the indulgence of everybody.
I think it's an important topic because the getting realistic numbers is going
to
be.
I know it is because I've had to work,
you know, the last few years in the air show business, you know, looking for sponsorships and pitching sponsorships is the same no matter what kind of business you're in. You got to show what's in it for the sponsor. What are they going to get out of it? And it's exposure. How much exposure is they going to get? And you got to be able to document it. It's got to be real. And it's got to be justifiable. And you got to be able. You can't just say 7,000, because then if you can't justify that, all of a sudden they will shoot you down. And if you have nothing to support that, you might as well not even wasted your time to go. ICAST, you know, International Council of Air Shows, they actually have courses now on people how to prepare your packets when they're looking for sponsorships.
Okay. Going back to our agenda, item number 8.
Yes, so I was going to ask Jim, because it's kind of with this business plan that's coming in, you know, this is kind of right before we get some actual information done by a consultant that's has some empirical evidence behind them. But I wanted to ask you about the master plan. When does that have to be done again, or does it? I mean, or is it good for 30 years or something?
It's not going to be done for a while. I think they recommend we kind of hold off until we kind of get through this whole cycle of our current development. We probably wouldn't want to do it until after the 6,000-foot runway is built.
Okay.
So we have a 5-year capital plan.
Right.
It isn't. So what I was going to push for, which again, you know, it could change when the consultant, the expert comes in with the information, is the fact that we have arenas, and it's nothing new that we've been talking about the whole time, was, you know, now that arenas is kicked up, we have more traffic going into the terminal, so it would be good to be able to refurbish or to enhance the opportunities for visitors in the actual terminal itself. We've got the 500, the press for the 500-foot virtual completion. The press is saying it's done, you know, so.
It's done,
right. And the fact that we've got 428 jobs coming in the next 3 years just at College Park, which is the complex that's by Walmart. They also have future expectations for additional housing there. There's 350 construction jobs while this will be built out. So Georgetown is growing. There's another, there's a hotel plan for that site, and there's also a hotel plan for another site in Georgetown. So that's that and the momentum gained by sports at the beach. It seems like Georgetown is finally coming out of its shell. And it would be nice to be able to market the airport and gain on this momentum. So hopefully this business plan will come up with things that, you know, my questions are, you know, about property inventory, you know, what's available and what's vacant and what's filled and that sort of thing. It's always good. But he may cover that as well. I know he covers, you know, I hope he will be covering the competition in the other airports around us, where we stand there. And to talk about economic development before we have that coming out next week seems like it's just completely subjective based on, you know, Pollyanna with big ideas. So.
Well, and what we'll have by the end of this week is a draft of the report. I mean, we're obviously going to have to look at it internally and decide what we want to do with it, and, you know, make whatever changes, and, you know, we'll have to then, you know, Todd or the council will have to decide what, if anything, they want the committee to do with it. So, like I said, it's a draft. It's, you know, it's still got to be worked internally.
But it's fairly thorough, at least.
Right.
I thought that
yeah.
the
parts
of
we've seen
it was
already
going to include all the details that we had talked about when
mm-hmm.
we originally spoke with Wiedemann, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then you got Wings and Wheels, so those numbers, whatever numbers we get, are benefit us as well. Any questions?
I'll make a comment about the business plan from my perspective. The business plan is very thorough. It's going to be, it's going to be a launching point. It's going to be used as a launching point to to really take a look at the airport and the industrial park. Everything from our branding to our expansion to our marketing, I think it's going to be a very good tool for us to use. And I hope to use it as much as, to get as much traction as distance as we can from it. So, that's my perspective.
And I did Delaware today, Delaware Media, it did stop by today, and they do have a specific product that could be geared to just marketing the airport or marketing a target market for a county. He went through that fairly specifically, of course, you know, with ads and, you know, when you're brainstorming, I thought, wouldn't that be wonderful to have a product a little bit thicker than this that we could actually market to the pilots up and down the coast or, you know, mail out so that it would show what we had available here. And that same thing with the branding, it could do build on that rather than, you know, Julie put together a little pamphlet, put a sticker on it and send it out. Which we did redo, by the way. We did the brochure, when was that?
When Arena's open. Yeah.
Yeah. So it's got Arena's in there and the new information. Garrett and Jim worked it out. And it's on the website.
Any comments, questions for economic development? Okay, number 9, Delaware gasoline tax discussion. Garrett?
There is no update. I think Bruce King may introduce something next year, next session.
Next session, which will be the January. Right. And I know Harvey Kenton's aware of it too, also.
Is he a Democrat or a Republican?
Republican.
She needs a Democrat, somebody on the Democratic side to help her. I mean, if it's just a bunch of Republicans asking for it, it's not going to happen. So if anybody wants to help her, I think that's what she needs.
Are you working this issue, or are you just making her aware of it and asking her to work it, or is it...
I'm not working in the political term. I'm not working. It means I made her aware of the issue many months ago. She said she studied it for a while, and now the last correspondence with her said she is going to introduce it into the next session, but she said she didn't think it would go anywhere.
Okay.
So that's why. But kind of reading between the lines, I think if it's just her introducing it, she needs some support from the other side of the aisle, and if she got that from the right person, I think it could go someplace. Because the DelDOT people themselves favor this legislation, so you know, there's support on that side, you know, outside the political side. So you know, I think it could. How do
we get support from aircraft owners that are based at other Delaware airports to also contact their representatives in the other two counties to support this, contact their elected representatives, as they say, to support it. And it shouldn't be just you and the folks here at Sussex County supporting this. There's other airports in the state that I'm sure would love to see it go away and would probably love to get involved with their representatives if they knew that there was a move or a bill. So if there is a bill drafted, we need to immediately start working to get the word out to all the other airports quickly and have all their people also. You know, I know some folks up in Wilmington. Jeff, you probably know some folks around the state too, different airports.
Yeah, I mean, definitely. Do you know anybody at Wilmington up north or any other airport? Reach out to them, let them know what's going on, have them contact their legislator, bring them up to speed.
Well, is there actually a bill being, is there, are you confident that there really will be some legislation proposed for the next session in spring?
You know, I've asked to talk to her, and she just sends emails, like she doesn't really want to have a verbal discussion about it. So I don't know, you know, I don't know what to think.
Should we, as a group?
Her email says she's going to introduce something.
Well,
that's all I have.
I would just hate to say something now and then everybody's always there, well, nothing's going to happen, forget about it.
Well, do we have any kind of like bullet point pluses and minuses that we can at least get to some other people so that we understand what the benefits are and the, I mean, is that something you can put together, Garrett, on this? And
yeah, we can put something together, yes.
And that way, at least we have something to...
We have a talking points document that we could send out to all the airports and say,
right,
this is something that's being considered. Here's the problem. They all know what the problem is. But, I just think we should wonder if we can get anywhere with this if we're the only ones trying to push it. And we only got one representative trying to push it.
I don't really know much about the political process, so, you know, whatever...
You're an elected official, sir. Yeah. What do you advise?
I know how to get it done, but I don't hope that.
It's called working it, right?
Yeah.
It is a.
It's the politically correct term.
It's a term of art, right?
Actually, I was told John is a Democrat from Saskatchewan, and so is East Washcloth. Those are two Democrats.
Wait.
Well, we've got to educate. If this is something we want to get behind, we've got to educate, and we've got to start with our delegation in Sussex County and educate them. It starts with, it could be as simple as a one-page talking document and tell them, look, this is what happens, this is how it affects us, this is how it affects business, and it's not going to cost anything. And leave it at that, and then spread the word.
I think the first thing he said is, simple things, put it on paper.
Yeah.
Because you've got word, you know, you should talk about something.
Here, you've probably been the closest to this. Could you, and maybe Jeff and I would even help, maybe try to do a one-page talking points kind of a document, what the problem is and what the solution would be, and what we perceive as the problems caused by, what we know what problem is, people bypass Delaware by abgas to some degree, but if we could do something.
Is other states giving free gas tax?
Don't have a gas tax. No,
they don't have a free gas tax. If they don't have gas tax, they put this on paper. This airport that does not have it, and we do have it. And said, and that gets you started. Because I don't really know what the problem is. I don't know these other towns don't have gas tax or what.
You know, because of my travel schedule, I've missed a lot of Powell's meetings. Have we invited our local elected delegation to come to Powell's meeting to hear us talk to them about it?
The pilots group has not asked recently for a local delegation to come by. Now, if we had a talking paper, we would be able to get that out to them. We'd be able to get it out to our members and then therefore be able to get it out to the local legislators. That would be a good thing that we have something. I mean, the state tax is what, 23 cents a gallon. So that makes Delaware a lot more marketable when somebody's planning their flight plan. I can tell you, I plan on fuel stops that are the most economical.
You mean,
okay,
if we didn't have the 23 cents, we would be more marketable?
Yes.
Yeah. Okay.
Because you're going to be 23 cents lower in price,
right,
and therefore...
Not necessarily.
It may not
it's
be 23
not,
cents.
Might not be 23
yeah.
cents,
it's,
but
it's a market demand item, but it certainly takes away one cost, one item, and the fuel vendors cost. So when they price their fuel, it's one less thing that they've got to consider. Yes, it's a reimbursable thing, but it's still something that they have to collect. And so they have to, like any other business, when they have to look and see what is the other market around, what's in the area, how long do people buy my gas, and they got to take that into consideration what their posted price is. Let me tell you, it gets my attention too when I got to call Garrett and say, Garrett, I need 400 gallons of gas.
Well, and you may go after the reimbursement, but the transient.
Oh, absolutely, go after reimbursement. Better do.
Yeah,
but
the transient ones.
Passing through, it's not going to go to that trouble. It's good shoeboxing.
Exactly.
And that's why Delaware has been able to get away for this all the years, because they make a ton of money off the shoebox effect.
Do we know how much?
Garrett, there was an estimate of that 1 year. One, $60,000 or $70,000
more. Ruth Brixton did get me a report from DelDOT that showed it was around $40,000. What the net was after the
and that's a dishonest game.
Why would the state Mayor, let's take the state side. Why would the state be interested in dropping this? Mm-hmm.
Because I think they have three people that are managing it. And that what was on that report, Gary?
In keeping track of it than it would cost them to get rid of it.
Yeah, they spend a lot.
Because they have to, there's full-time people that are dealing with these reimbursements.
The only administrative cost of, cost of money of the forms and issuing the checks and doing audits of fuel providers and, there's a whole lot of paperwork just to make the $40,000, and if they got rid of all that, those people could be redeployed and used somewhere else, or, just through attrition, those people would go away.
Now, you want to take it off from the front, or you want to reimburse you back to money? How are you going to work this?
You have to advertise for it to be a gain to the economic boost of this airport. You have to advertise it. It has to be off the front. And somebody like myself, if I'm flying from here to Florida, I'm looking at two or three places that sells fuel that I know is usually right in the ballpark. And that's where I just sit to decide that's where I'm going to stop and get fuel.
Well, if state's not going to make any money off me anyway, so what do they care if it goes? Why do they care if it goes to Florida?
But the thing of it is if somebody plans to come here...
I pay state income tax. I mean, the more business I get,
I know, I'm not talking about... I know where you come from. I know your problem. But I'm talking about Jeff here. Why does the state care if the state buys gas or not? Why does he care if you buy your gas somewhere else? Jeff's not going to make any money off you.
From the economic development of the motels, when they come here and stop, they get weathered in. The fuel that Garrett sells, the flowage to the county.
I'm talking about when I'm driving on my road going down, when I come to Dollar, right over Dollar, you're still taxing me from my car. I said, shucks, I'm buying these other products from you. You guys ought to give me a break here. I mean, you can use that argument, but you got the other side of this argument here.
I don't think it's as much an economic argument as much as the basis
of the argument is this was a motor fuel tax to pay for road construction, and no one ever thought about aircraft that don't use roads. So all of a sudden, as an afterthought, said, "Oops, well, okay, we can't collect it because they're not using roads. So now we got to do a reimbursement." It was a mistake made when the law was written, and it's time to just simply fix the mistake. Without all the other arguments, they just need to fix a mistake.
Let's go further back.
Okay,
farmers pay fuel tax.
Yeah.
And I got tractors I never get reimbursed on.
But you can.
Never.
But you could.
You can.
Well, I go through the whole war just like you guys.
Well, right.
That's just what you're talking about.
That's the point we're making.
If it wasn't on the books, you wouldn't have to worry about it.
So now if we're going to take away gas tax, let's do it for the farmers too. Let's go up there and say, hey, farmers, let's do it for anybody who don't use gas. We don't want no tax on it.
Well, let's start with the pilots, and you can go from there.
I was going to say, we as this committee are charged with trying to protect the interest of the aviation community.
Well, you're talking about economic development.
I am.
Farmers don't contribute as much
but
as anybody.
This committee is charged.
We're talking about the viability of this airport and the development of this airport. That's what we're talking about.
Sure,
motor fuel that's sold, at the pump that's used on the farm can be used on the roads, it can be used in the farm, it can be used in both. That's not the point we're talking about. It has nothing to do with the whole point of this discussion. The point of this discussion is an aviation tax. Okay.
You just got to say it because they don't use the roads. Well, we go right back to the same point. So if we're going there, we'll just go take the whole strength of all the people that don't use roads and say,
and the airplanes,
the whole body. We should all, as one group, go in there and say,
farmers do use the roads.
Yes.
I had to sit and wait a half hour the other day for two combines to clear a highway so I could go down.
Well, they had to get across the other field if they hadn't built the darn road there.
All right, ladies and gentlemen. All right, ladies and gentlemen, if you'll please give... hold on. Larry, if we'd all give our attention to Jim. Go ahead, Jim.
The other argument that the state's going to make is that $40,000 goes into the fund that they use to pay the 5% matching for the airports.
I know what you're going to say.
So it does get used. It's not just roads. That's the fund that pays the, their matching fund. So,
that's right.
Our grant we just got, the state share is $200,000. So, $40,000 out of that fund that you get from the fuels paying for not even... a quarter of that project. So it does come back to the airport.
Are you certain?
Yep.
Dollar amount does go into that line item in
question.
Sure
it does.
Yep. Now,
it doesn't belong there.
How about the other states?
It doesn't belong there, which means us, Jeff and I and the others is buying this aviation fuel are the ones doing that share. Directly.
What about the other states
same as
the
fuel,
doesn't have
fuel flow
tax, then are they receiving anything from their state or no? They're not receiving anything?
The other airports.
And the other states, are they receiving any benefit from the state?
Yeah, oh yeah.
Give me that job.
Some of them do.
Well,
Pennsylvania definitely does.
Yeah.
Well, let's talk about the process. First of all, if we get the bullet points, if Derek can put the bullet points together, that'll go to the local representative, and she'll take it and go to DelDOT and the other agencies that manage it. Is this a good thing or a bad thing? Each agency will get an opportunity to put their thoughts into it. And if DelDOT thinks it's a good thing because it saves money, then they'll put that, that's what they'll put in there. Health and Social Services says they don't have a dog in that fight, that's what they'll put down. Okay? And then once they collect all that information, then they take it to the legislature and say, do we want to make this? And is this, what's the wording? So we got multiple steps to get to here. And if it's a desire of the group to have a review of it, then we have to make somebody ask for that request. And that's where the legislator comes in, whether it's Ruth Briggs King, Schwarzkopf, or somebody from another county. So if that's something we want to pursue, then we need to have some sort of document together and say, here's the benefits to the airport or to the flying community, and can you please look into it? And they'll give the opportunity to the state to give a counter argument or to agree with it, and that's the way it'll travel. So it's not for us to decide, you know, whether we need to collect it. They may collect the farmers, they may collect the jet skis, they may collect the boats, and say, you know, let's put it all in because it's a mistake for everybody. We still obtained what we wanted. So, you know, we need to start with the bullet statements of what it's going to bring to the table, what we're looking for.
I agree completely. Just as a direct, absolute example, Sunday evening I was getting ready to leave Winston-Salem Airport. And I was low on fuel. Now, I had enough to get home, but I had what I knew. I had to go to Manassas, and we were going to be in the air for an hour and a half to go and hold and do this Manassas this flyover at Arlington Cemetery, and then go back to Manassas, and then come back over. So I'm going to need a lot of gas on board. So I know what Garrett charges for gas. Garrett, this is nothing personal. Okay, I know what Garrett charges for gas. I asked the FBO down there, what's gas going to cost? $4.10 a gallon. What do you think I did? Okay, I topped off. I wanted to go buy gas cans with gas in. I filled it up with every drop I could get in. Okay, and then instead of coming to Georgetown and getting and calling Garrett, you know, put me 400 or 500 gallons of gas in first thing Monday morning, so I get here by get out of here by 7 o'clock before the runway closed. So now I just topped off down there, landed in Salisbury instead. I've still got a bunch of gas in the airplane, so that's probably 400 gallons worth of gas that I would have bought here. Okay.
And that price is the deciding factor.
You know, Garrett's come, you know, dropped his fuel to $4.10. He's not going to be able to do that because this was an airship discount. But the point is, it's the same kind of logic that is used every day by every pilot when they're flight planning.
And that was my beginning point.
Which is flowage that doesn't go to the county, which is money that doesn't go into Garrett's, which goes into his pockets and his employees that pay taxes here and that rent houses here and everything else. It's a whole economic impact that doesn't occur. And this is a unique, specific category called aviation fuel that is only used in the air. It makes no sense to tax it for the road. Motor fuel is bought out here at a gas station, is used on a farm, can be used for multiple reasons. That's a different discussion. It has nothing to do with the discussion. We're talking about aviation fuel, which is 100 octane fuel that if you go put it in your car, will destroy your catalytic converter in 100 miles. You can't use it in a car. You cannot use it on vehicles that can be used on the roads. Okay, it's a specific category of fuel that is taxed for a purpose that doesn't exist. So there's every reason in the world to get rid of it. It should not be there. Okay.
So with the request for Garrett to put that some point bullets down on a piece of paper, is there any other comments for this from this group? Yes, sir.
If Garrett put something together, if he can get me a copy, I got a relative that's a senator that'll probably say something in the legislature for us.
Okay. I mean, the first step, I think, is getting something together that that we can travel with and go forward. Because Larry understands the economic. That's what I was trying to say. Everybody plans their route to where they're going and when they're going to plan on stopping. May not be able to do it because of weather or other reasons, but the plan does usually include fuel and the cost of fuel. And we sit here on with Victor 1, there's a good corridor that goes up the east side of Philadelphia, and a lot of people follow that VFR corridor right up, go north. So, you know, we're missing, a good opportunity to be having more flowage, more in and out aircraft, whether it ends up being rental cars, motel rooms, Burger King sales, or whatever. So I think we're going to start with getting something from Garrett together on it. And for Garrett not having any comment on the subject to start with, we certainly have had enough discussion on it. Unless somebody has a real strong feeling it, then we need to talk more about it. We're kind of going around in circles.
I didn't come across. I hope I didn't come across it. I'm opposed to getting the tax break. You need some of the arguments on the other side. I'm telling you what they are. The Empire's giving an excellent argument. $240,000. You said we take in $40,000. That's going to take 6 years to even get that money back. So I'm just giving the other side the argument on this thing.
I understand. Okay. Not hearing anything else. Let's go to item number 10, airport business plan update.
Julie made me say everything I was going to say, so I have nothing left.
Last time somebody said they had nothing, we ended up with
really
a 20-minute discussion.
Really
any questions on what Jim just briefed us on? Going to item number 11, hearing none. No comments on number 10. Let's go to number 11. Public comments, sir. We appreciate your attendance. I don't know what you did with the rest of the folks that wanted to come tonight, but we appreciate your attendance.
The only comment I got is that, you know, talking to some of the veterans that I know that are disabled, they would love to see some place where you've got a handicap parking for your wings and wheels.
There's handicap parking.
And I know you're limited in space here, and it's just like, you know, like Larry said, it's always going to be a problem.
There's handicap parking and access in the plan. And, you know, I've not paid a whole lot of attention to that because the chamber's handling that side completely. But I would go to the wings-wheels.com website and see what the parking accommodations are on the website for handicap, and or there's a place in there you can ask a question. And there's someone who looks at that every day, because all the questions comes in piles, gets referred to me, and I have to answer them, and ask them what that plan is.
I think the handicap parking is actually at the school before you get on the bus, and then the buses accommodate handicapped people.
Well, we also got golf carts running around that will help out from that area.
Right.
You know, last year they did. So handicap
parking. Right. But as far as parking the cars for handicapped people, I think that's all over at the school.
Okay.
You got
closer to the bus.
You know, vets, or if they can get together, you know, get in touch with me, we'll find a way to get them out here on the field. We are a very veteran-friendly organization. You know, we do everything we can. I got a golf cart down there in my hangar. If we need to run it up, get somebody, bring them in, we'll do that.
But in all seriousness, do appreciate your attendance. You've been here in multiple meetings. You probably have missed the fewest meetings out of people around this table. So we do appreciate that. And I don't know that I've not heard any public comments or complaints about aviation. Jim, do you have anything that's come in from the public?
Nobody complained that day we took off running 810. Figure somebody out that way would be complaining. We never go that way.
We've had complaints about people flying miles from the airport. Then I'll get Susan started, but people will call and airplanes just buzz my house, you know, 10 miles away. Of course, you know all about it. Don't lie to me.
Okay.
Do something.
I hear complaints. We haven't got the other 500 feet on and got that roof cut across here yet.
We're We're working on that.
You know, I've heard more complaints over that a little bit. That's the biggest complaint.
That's been turned over to the county council to come up with funding, and I think we're waiting on you. All right, sir.
Falls in your court.
Yeah. But again, appreciate your attendance, and we'll go from there. Going to item number 12, next meeting date. Now, the third Wednesday is, or fourth Wednesday is the Thanksgiving. I don't plan on spending Thanksgiving Eve with all you folks here. No offense, but I think we're better off probably to try to move it and combine the November-December date.
Well, I'm not going to spend Christmas here when you did it.
Okay. Well, then that knocks out that.
You do something in halfway in between then.
And that's what we're looking at. I would recommend like the 4th. I'd recommend the 4th, which is the first Wednesday. If you get into the...
I'll be out of town, but don't let me drive. I'll be at the ICAST convention.
If you get into the 11th or the... What's that?
Sam and I will have a meeting on the 4th.
Yeah.
Okay, there's three of us out.
I won't be here either.
There's four of us out.
Yeah,
sorry. All right, so that was a great idea, but the 11th is the following week. Anybody got a problem with the 11th? If you go any farther into December, you're going to start getting into the Christmas parties and the...
Yeah, it'd be contingent on the swearing being available.
I'll be... test pilot school that whole week, but we may very well complete our contract on the 9th or the 10th. We could be finished as early as the 10th, so I may very well be able to make that.
Any other concerns about the 11th?
December the 11th.
Looking at December 11th. Hearing none. Do I need to make a motion on that?
Mm-hmm.
Let's make a motion on next meeting being December 11th.
Second.
Garrett had made a motion and Larry seconded it. With that, I'd like to call a meeting to adjourn. Do I hear a motion to adjourn the meeting? Do I hear a second? Thanks, sir. Appreciate everybody's time.